Hello, welcome to The Rest is History. Tom has been on his travels again, but I'm delighted to say that he is back in the country. And I'm particularly delighted because, Tom, it is 2 years since you rang me up and said, Dominic, I have a terrible idea for you. I want to drag you into doing a podcast.
No, Dominic, it was more than that. It was months before that, because it took us about 2 months to set up the first recording, didn't it?
That's true. My chronology is all over the
yes,
place.
Yes, it's all over the place.
But it's the 2 year anniversary of our first broadcast, of our first release.
First episode. The Love Me Do of The Rest is History.
Golly, what a thought.
It seems simultaneously like it was yesterday and it also a very, very long time ago. Don't you think?
Well, I'll tell you why, because obviously we're at an age now where things that happened 2 years ago do seem like they
zip past.
They zip past.
But when you break it down into each episode, you think that's a lot of episodes.
But also the truth of the matter is, Tom, the podcast has changed our working lives quite a lot. Hasn't it?
It has.
I mean, it's made a big difference to my week. When I look at I've had to basically invest in a new massive diary as well as my normal diary so I can write down Rest is History, Tom Holland, again.
I know. Well, because you're actually late to record this, aren't you? You got stuck in traffic. So I was staring, waiting for your happy face to appear. And I was thinking, I can't believe I'm actually looking forward to seeing Dominic again.
Tom, that's so touching. I find that so moving.
When I say looking forward to, because I've got to go quite soon. That was why. No, obviously, always happy to see you. Always happy to see you. But
somebody said online, they said about 3 days ago, I think it was when you were in California, the guy replied to me and he said, it must be American, because he said, are you all okay? Because there's a lot of bickering in that last podcast. And I said,
which one was that?
I can't remember which one. I think it was, I don't know, Treason, Alfred. Could be any of them, Tom. Let's be honest. Could be any of them. And I said, yeah, we're fine. We just, I just went to public school and this is how we speak. And I felt that had sufficiently explained the, Anyway, you've been in California. So while I was engaging in banter with people, you're in California.
Yeah, I've been on a totally different timescale.
And you went to see the grave of Jack London.
I did. So I was in a place called Sonoma for a conference.
Yep, and, lovely.
Sonoma, have you been there?
I haven't. I've drunk their wine, but I haven't been there.
So it's the it's the place where the most northerly of the Franciscan missions were set up in, I think, 1824 or something like that. Yeah. And then the Mexican government piled in because they were worried about Russian infiltration. So very improbably, it's a scene of probably history's greatest Mexican-Russian standoff. And the whole place, the center is very, very attractive in a kind of faintly she-she boutique hotel kind of way.
I mean,
massively, massively.
It's kind of White Lotus territory, isn't it, Tom? I mean,
it's very, very White Lotus territory. Actually, no.
Was it more Succession?
Not even that. No, not quite. Maybe if kind of a few grades down from that. But it was very, it was very, very nice. And there was a very nice woman there who was, I think, professor of study of history of religion or something like that at Duke, called Kate Bowler, who was great. And she had an app that can tell you where there are interesting historical sites of historical interest near to you.
That's a good app.
And also she had a car. And so she suggested that we go and look at Jack London's grave. So we went and did that, and it was a brilliant grave. It's just a kind of boulder in the middle of a beautiful wood. But do you know anything about Jack London?
Sure, I've never read him.
I did read him. My dad read him to me. White Fang and Call of the Wild. It's kind of gritty tales of dogs, basically, in the Yukon. Great stuff. But I didn't know anything about his life. So the tragic thing is, he and his wife spent years building their dream house, and there was a plan of the layout, and it had a room entirely to house his awards. They had something called Stag Party Room.
Oh, I heard.
I had no idea what that was involved.
What's going on in
plastic
there?
Breasts and drinking beer or whatever. And it looked wonderful. And he wrote it about a month before they were due to move in. He said, "We've built this out of concrete, so I hope, acts of God willing, that we will be here for, it will stand here for 1,000 years. And 2 days later, it burnt down.
No.
And they had to abandon it.
Wow. And
it's ruined stand there. It looks like something out of Pompeii.
That is a very good story.
But and then there was a museum And I've never been to a museum where it was the curators were so obviously in love with their subjects.
Oh,
they adored them. Yeah. And his wife, Charmian, was obviously quite a person as well. Lots of kind of photos of them looking healthy and happy in swimwear.
Sounds great, Tom. Sounds great. We did a podcast, didn't we, about the history of California. And it's one of those podcasts that we did. You were talking about how, you know, it's 2 years and it seems like we've done such a colossal amount. It's actually one of those podcasts I'd love to do again, just because I think the subject is so good. Yeah. And
well, we can do Dominic, and that's the fun of it, isn't it? We can do anything we like. There's literally nothing to stop us. So once we've done the whole of history, we can just go round and do it all again.
Do the whole of history again. Yeah. Now, Sam, our question compiler, is a massive football fan, and the World Cup is coming. So people will probably be dreading mention of football. But Sam is very excited because he notices that both the West Midlands teams that we both support both have new Spanish managers. So Aston Villa's manager is Unai Emery, and Wolves' is Julen Lopetegui. And he wants to know, Tom, if you'll offer some top sporting punditry on their appointments.
My top sporting punditry is that any manager who takes over and then enables us to win 3-1 against Manchester United has to be good.
Good call. Very good call. I'm very optimistic. Wolves have been terrible this season.
You're second from the bottom, aren't you?
We are, but at the same time, we're only about 6 points off 12th or something. So it's
more glamorous to be in a kind of end of table struggle than mid table mediocrity, which is what we've got.
It is. I think Lopetegui is a very good manager. His father. So Tom, one day we should do a podcast about the Basque Country, because it's such a strange place. And Lopetegui's father was a professional stone lifter, by which I don't mean a stone. I don't mean a stone mason. I mean, he lifted rocks in competitions.
Wow.
And there's a photograph of him.
That's kind of very Lord of the Rings behavior, isn't it?
Very Lord of the Rings. There's a photograph, like a dwarf or something. There's a photograph of him in, I assume, the 1960s, maybe, with Lopetegui, the Wolves manager, looking very small. And his father is holding two children up on the palms of his hands, one on each hand, which is very impressive.
Is this a hobby that that he's taken up himself? I mean, could he inspire the team by lifting boulders on the touchline?
No. So this is an interesting thing, that when he took up football, among his Basque family and their friends, football was seen as a kind of Castilian game. Mm. And it was a slight betrayal of the Basque
of the heritage.
Yeah. So it's an interesting... So for those people who don't like football, the place for you is the Basque Country.
Yeah.
Clearly. Anyway, now I have to say there may be mentions of football in later podcasts because the World Cup is upon us.
Well, Dominic, let's be upfront about it. There are going to be. And I think we should spell out for anyone who is nervous about there being too much football, we are going to do two, possibly three episodes that will be going out next week on the history of the World Cup. But the emphasis will be very much on the history. And if you enjoyed the episodes that we did on the Olympic Games, and you may remember the Dwyer flonking, one of the great moments in the whole history of this podcast. I can't promise that there will be something comparable to that in the World Cup episodes, but it will be very much on that idea that each World Cup, because they're every 4 years, provide a kind of temperature check on the state of geopolitics. Yeah. And the story of the World Cup is incredible. There's a lot of death.
There's a lot of death, but also it's actually bound up in a way that I hadn't really, I mean, I love the World Cup and I'm obsessed with the history of it and sort of know all the results. But before researching this subject, I had never appreciated how much it was bound up with late 19th and then early 20th century nation building, particularly in South America. And it allows us actually to tell the stories of countries that and time periods. I mean, we'd never normally talk about Argentina in the 1920s or something. But I think this allows us to talk about some really interesting historical subjects. And then we're talking a lot about Mussolini, won't we? And and then, politics in the 1970s and so on. So there's actually, if you loathe the game, I would say, don't worry, you will emerge unscathed.
But then, Dominic, then we go into our 32-episode marathon, and we guarantee there is no football in any one of those 32 episodes.
None at all. So we've mentioned already some of the things we're doing, but, Tom, we can give a slight preview, can't we, to the Wangs?
I think we could. Yes, I think we could. I'm going to look it up.
You've done a couple of brilliant episodes. You did one about Dido from Carthage. You did one about Diocletian. What else? You did that wonderful Australian unsolved murder.
Yes, that was fun.
I've done, golly, what have I done? The White Rose Movement in Germany.
Wonderful story. So moving. And that's a very, very moving episode.
The Day of the Dead in Mexico and its origins and its kind of cultural significance.
You have done the Costa Rican Civil War, which I think is the kind of the unexpected, but I suspect breakout
star
with some amazing figures in it, including the highly sinister Dr. Valverde.
Well,
and Don Pepe.
Don Pepe. I think Don Pepe is one of the greatest.
And I think Don Pepe and Dr. Valverde will
live long in people's memories.
Absolutely.
We also have a musical. We have a musical episode, Tom, coming from Uruguay.
Yes, we do.
The Sound of Montevideo.
Well, and also, of course, the episode on Dido will feature an extract from my forthcoming opera on Cleopatra.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
So much to look forward to.
There's a lot of... And the original plan, by the way, for these World Cup episodes, I can't remember whether it was my idea or your idea, but certainly when we first discussed it, it was kind of...
I mean, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I think it was my idea.
Was it your idea?
Because I can remember you kind of grumbling about me making you work too hard.
I'm not sure.
Because it was in the context of the 12 Days of Christmas as well.
Jack, our producer, is texting us, and he says, if any of the Wangs listening to this can get us on the one show sofa, please reach out. So if you, basically Jack wants us to go on TV to discuss
Jack
this.
Jack is pimping us. So there's way of pushing it.
If you can make that happen, you know, who's that, who presents the one show? I don't even know who presents the one show. If they're listening, they'll definitely not have us on now. Jermaine Genus, says Jack. So that is another football reference. I'm sorry about that. So the original plan was we would do quite short subjects. And that absolutely collapsed. That Tom and I have done proper episodes about all these subjects.
We just can't help ourselves, can we? We've got a few to come, and I've tried to make them a bit shorter. But there was one in particular, the episode we're doing on Senegal, that I thought would be really simple. It's about the Door of No Return, which is this the UNESCO World Heritage Site, one of the first 12 that were set up on the island of Goree, which is a place of pilgrimage for African Americans whose ancestors were supposedly taken from there. But the episode will, I think, turn out to be a bit more complicated than we had envisaged. And I suspect will generate some very interesting discussion. We haven't actually recorded that yet, but I think that's one to look for as well.
Yeah, and you've done one about the Kaaba, Saudi Arabia. We're back at dipping our toes back into Islamic history. There's lots and lots of interesting stuff there.
There really is. I mean, it really is, I think, a very good way for us to have done episodes on areas of the world and indeed aspects of the world, the histories that we wouldn't have done.
Well, because we're very conscious that in the last maybe 2 months, by complete coincidence, really, we've done, I mean, a few people have pointed this out. We've done a lot of kind of our island story.
Yeah, British victories.
British victories. Yeah, we did young Churchill. We did Trafalgar, Alfred.
I think we should just explain how it was that we did come to do quite so many. I mean, normally we would try and spice it up and not have such a kind of Anglo-centric take. But we'd done the Churchill ones, hadn't we, in the summer. Yeah. And we wanted to put them out.
Yeah.
Trafalgar we needed to do because it was the anniversary.
Well, we say needed. You decided to go mad and to do 27 episodes about Trafalgar.
Yeah, but it was great, wasn't it?
You fell in love with the subject on holiday. And then Alfred because of the book.
And Monty and the Generals because Al had Monty his and the book Generals. Out.
Yeah, because Alfred.
So it was just a kind of confluence of circumstances.
So Listen, you will be able to sort of, if you found that too much flag of St. George waving, then you'll be able to purge that in the 32 episodes. You know, by the time you get to, you know, I don't know, Uruguay or something, see what you think. Then you'll be pining for General Gordon.
I really hope you enjoy them.
I
certainly learnt a lot doing them.
They've been good fun to do those.
Well, they really have. Anyway, we should just whistle on and look at some of the other episodes we've done. So we did treason, didn't we? I mean, I know it was kind of Anglo-centric because it was focused on British treason, but I thought an interesting subject. Al the King, was James Hewitt and maybe others guilty of treason for violation of the wife of an heir to the throne? Now, there were a number of questions along those lines that we asked the curators.
And they're all cut out.
Well, they weren't, because they told us beforehand they wouldn't answer them. because they said that they are civil servants. Isn't that right? They rank as civil servants, and so they are not allowed to comment on anything that might be of particularly topical interest. So that's why we didn't have anything on that subject.
Yeah. Lurkio says he really enjoyed these episodes, and he can hardly believe he's about to write these words, educational. But he has a suggestion. Thomas More versus Thomas Cromwell, with us pitching for our man, with a vote to decide the king's mind at the end. That's quite a fun idea, I think.
Well, kind of, except that I wouldn't say Thomas More is my man. I mean, they're all horrible. They're all horrible. I'm just saying that given the choice, you know, between, I don't know, botulism and Ebola, I'd go for botulism. I mean, it's that kind of level.
But didn't we talk about this before, that actually the choice between More and Cromwell is basically it's sort of cultural posturing, isn't it?
Is it, Dominic? Cultural posturing?
It is, of course.
Surely not. I wasn't culturally posturing at all. No, I wasn't. I was saying I respect someone more who dies for their conscience.
I think when you pick one of those two, they become since Hilary Mantel wrote her book, choosing sides, More Cromwell. But no one really talked about Thomas. I mean, they did, specialists did. But in the public at large, Thomas Cromwell was not a massive figure to play with until Hilary Mantel made him the protagonist of her books. And I think now, Team More, Team Cromwell is a slightly, you know.
No, well, okay, so I refute that on two grounds. Oh. The first is, I was very familiar with Thomas Cromwell because I did it for A-level.
Yeah, but you do history.
I did it for A-level, and the grind of G.R. Elton on Cromwell, A-level revision. Yeah. Oh, I hate the man.
G.R. Elton or Cromwell?
Both of them. Right. That book, I mean, I just the feel of it brings back palpitations.
G.R. Elton is very much about bureaucracy, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's very boring.
And Thomas More didn't feature in that, so no. I give him a free pass. But the other thing is, I knew that if it got framed as this kind of bulldog Protestant against weedy intellectual kind of Catholic, I just knew what you'd do with it.
I know, yes. I'm so predictable. I am so.
It's a massively open goal and you've just gone for it. But I'm not going to be typecast as Thomas More.
Whereas I'm completely leaning in, as they say, to my caricature.
Yeah, dissolving monasteries left, right and centre.
So Anthony Sanders, from an American perspective, one thing these episodes reminded me of is how influential all this was on the founding fathers of the United States. So he says the original unamended United States Constitution has very few protections of individual rights, but two of them are a rule against bills of attainder and against corruption by blood. And there's a definition of treason that requires two witnesses to testify against the defendant for the same treasonous act. And it shall consist only in levying war against the United States or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. So the trial of Charles I and many others, he suggests, loomed large in their minds. Of course it would, because the founding, I think what's, and I completely agree with Anthony's proposition. I think the founding fathers of the United States were absolutely steeped in 17th century history. I mean, there's a whole whole American historiography. I think it's Louis Hart's, his name was, very unfashionable now. But he wrote a wonderful book that I remember reading when I was doing my graduate studies. And his argument was basically that he was writing in the 1950s. And his argument was basically that the United States was like a sort of spin-off of 17th century England that had floated off into the Atlantic and just got stuck.
Yeah.
And had not changed and was stuck in the 17th century. And you know what?
It's like the land that time forgot.
Constitutionally.
Yeah.
So there's kind of an element of truth in that, isn't there? Because I think, although I remember studying the United States Constitution when I was an undergraduate, and my tutor saying at the beginning, he said, I always ask the students, you know, do you think it's a good idea to have a written constitution? What do you think of the US Constitution? And they always, all these British students always said, oh, it's a great idea. It's an amazing document, blah, blah, blah. And then he asked us at the end of the course the same question and everybody changed their minds.
Interesting. Why was that?
I think because we did a lot about, I know you have a horror of this period, Tom. We did a lot about Reconstruction. And the US Constitution in Reconstruction, you can argue, acts as a real break against change, as it does now, of course. Mm. Now, a lot of our American listeners may say, you know, limey filth, you know nothing of our Constitution and you're completely misinterpreting it and all that sort of thing. But I think it's an interesting conversation. We could do a podcast about it, actually. It's an interesting subject.
So I have a question. The levying war against the United States.
Yeah.
Has anyone mentioned that in the context of the attack on the Capitol?
I believe they have mentioned it, yeah. I've seen commentary, people talking about exactly that, yes.
But, I mean, so we're recording this on Tuesday, aren't we?
A treason trial, Tom. a treason trial for those involved with that incident would be...
What a spectacle.
It would be a great spectacle, but probably not the healthiest development.
No, well, we'll know what, and we'll know what's happened in the midterms probably by the time you get to hear this.
What, so the midterms, I was thinking about this because this is a great example of your thesis, Tom, about Americanization. Because I would say 20 years ago, the chances of the midterms being reported as one of the lead stories in Britain would have been small. I mean, no one would have cared what happened in Kentucky. Yeah. Now it's the lead story in the BBC website.
Could be, or it could be the fact that the stakes seem quite high. I mean, people, certainly having been in America these past few days, the apocalyptic tone on both sides is very pronounced.
Yeah.
And definitely the feeling that these are, I think, far more important than perhaps people would have seen them as being in previous years.
You'd have missed it, but over the weekend, I think it was either in The Observer or The Guardian, I can't tell which because it was on their website, there was a story about the prospects of civil war, which we, of course, talked about with Adam Smith, didn't we, earlier this year.
And indeed in our second episode.
Which was before the presidential election, I think.
Yeah.
And there were three people, experts, academics, and all of them, one way or another, predicted violence and unrest in the next kind of 10 years. So it was quite a depressing. Of course, it might not turn out that way, though. I mean, history does have a habit of confounding predictions, as readers of my journalism will know very well.
Tipping Penny Mordaunt for greatness.
Could still happen, Tom. Could still happen.
Don't forget, I spotted Sunak.
Yeah. Well, you're well done. No one else noticed him at that point.
No,
that
I said he'd be Prime Minister, and I stuck to that, even when he lost. Now there he is, so there you go. So, Alfred the Great.
Yeah. So, Matt at the Mill. So, an interesting question. It left me thinking about how these histories are often written on the assumption the author and the reader are descendants of the settled group, i.e. Alfred and Anglo-Saxons, rather than over either the Boneless and the Vikings. And Matt says, this shouldn't be them and us, it's us and us, because, of course, they are just as much our ancestors as the Anglo-Saxons are.
I think if you're in East Anglia, if you're in East Anglia or you're in Cumbria or you're in the Isle of Man, then I think that is the case. I think if you're in the heart of Wessex, no, they didn't settle in Wessex.
Tom is not.
I'm not having
Tom
any of that.
Absolutely.
No, I'm not having any of that. I mean, he mentions the Beaker people.
Yeah.
So that is an interesting one. The Beaker people are the people who came over and basically finished off the people who built Stonehenge.
Right.
And people who listened to the episode we did on Stonehenge may remember that there was discussion about exactly how it was that the Beaker people finished off the people who built Stonehenge. We're not sure. So I have no strong feelings either way. I don't identify with either of them. I feel that they're very, very alien. But I do identify, I guess, emotionally with the West Saxons in Alfred's time, simply because I grew up very, very close to the nunnery where the women of the West Saxon line were very much identified with it. And so emotionally from childhood, I've always identified with them.
That's
and,
fair enough, Tom.
And the thing is that in a, when you're writing a book, you slightly have to keep that under a veil. You have to at least pretend to objectivity. But I think in a podcast, I don't. In a podcast, I can...
You can do what you like.
I can do what I like.
Yeah. I think the one thing I might have replied to Matt, I can't remember, maybe I just thought it. There are versions of the story, very recent versions that are told from the Vikings' perspective. So one is obviously the TV series Vikings, where you're with the Vikings from start to finish. And the other is probably, Tom will probably laugh at this, but probably even more successful, certainly with younger people, the most recent Assassin's Creed video game, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So there you invade England and Alfred is the antagonist.
You see, that's why I would never play that.
Yeah. Tom, they've actually committed worse sins in that franchise because Assassin's Creed 3, you are fighting on behalf of the American Revolution, tax evaders against the British. And that
traitors.
Would be, well, obviously, yeah. I mean, this is the argument, Matt, of the last kingdom, isn't it? Ultimately, they were all both Dane and Saxon. Tom doesn't like it, but there you go.
No, I disagree. In the East Anglian context or the Cumbrian context, of course it's true, but it's not true, I think. I don't think there was a massive Danish or Norse influx into Wiltshire, say, or Dorset.
Right.
And the church, the language, the monarchy, that Alfred was fighting for, the continuities from that into the present day are very clear. There are no continuities from the gods that the Norse worship. Their language isn't spoken in Wiltshire. And we're not ruled out, and we are not ruled over by a Norse king.
So that's the curators at Jorvik in York.
Yeah, well, Jorvik's different. I mean, Jorvik is a Viking city.
Okay.
In a way that Winchester isn't.
That's fair. That is fair. Carl W. has a question. Is my prose dramatic enough to appeal to kids? He worries it may be too dry and academic.
I think that is a problem. That is a risk.
Yeah, not enough gore.
And also not enough supposition.
Supposition?
Yeah, all that. I mean, you... You're very confident about what happened.
Yeah, but this, you know, Tom, I was having lunch with my editor today, my editor at Penguin, and we were talking about precisely this issue with the next book, which I'm, you know, working on at the moment, which is about the fall of the Aztecs.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Conquistadors. And we were just chatting about the challenge of a children's book is you have to choose. If you're going to write a narrative, you can have hints of nuance, of course, and we don't know this, we don't know. Some people say, men said that God, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
That's what I do.
But if you have to tell the story for 10-year-olds, you have to choose. You have to choose.
I know, Dominic. I'm not in any way criticizing. I thought it was stirring stuff and a wonderful way to both open and conclude our episodes.
And actually, that's very kind of you, Tom. To go back to Matt's question, the one thing I did in that Vikings book is I thought I have to keep really changing the focus. So in that section, all about Alfred, we're with Alfred and he's the hero. But obviously there are other ones, when Eric the Red is going to Greenland or when they're sailing down the, exploring the rivers of the East, I thought, well, obviously the Vikings will be the protagonists here. We're with them. Even though, unfortunately, when they're sailing down the rivers of the East, they are, of course, carrying boatloads of slaves, which makes it a slightly interesting challenge to write about.
But as you said, 10-year-olds don't seem to worry about that. The 10-year-olds in that museum where they all had to... choose their slaves?
Absolutely. I think 10-year-olds would worry if you were telling that story about the triangular trade. They would already...
But ancient slavery, perhaps, is different.
Ancient slavery, and if the slaves also look like them or like their parents, they think, yes. Great. or their teachers.
Yeah, pack them off to Miklagard.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Tom, have we got any much... What else have we got going
Well, we got one final question from Napoleon Solo, who is relatively new to the Discord. And was wondering if people had ideas for the best episodes of The Rest is History.
Wow.
Napoleon Solo loved the Burgundian episode. Well, great news. We have the great man, Bart van Loo, coming back, and he's going to be talking about Jan van Eyck. So yeah, that is something very much to look forward to. And learned the most in the Falkland series. I think the Falkland series, I loved doing the Falkland series.
Oh, that's nice of you, Tom.
It was, well, I could absolutely rely on your expertise and just chuck in the occasional fun bit. So, but it was just, I thought it was... it was a serious topic, but it was also very comic.
I do like the comic ones, I have to say.
I think General Gordon had slightly similar as well.
I think we both really enjoyed General Gordon because it was unexpected. Was that my idea? General Gordon must have been.
Yeah, absolutely your idea.
I think sometimes when we have a guest who is absolutely on fire.
I loved Rachel's episodes.
So, for example, The Smugglers. I loved Rachel's. About churches.
Yes, Alex,
I liked Alex
great.
Preston about smuggling, because I thought, I had low expectations, because just about an hour before he came on, you said, oh, by the way, he's not a historian, he's a novelist. And I was like, what? Why is he, you've just got your mate from the cricket team to come on the podcast.
Well, in one sense I had, but there's nothing wrong with that.
And he turned out to be so tremendously well-informed and to have such an interesting perspective that I really did feel like I learned a colossal amount.
And we have another mate from my cricket team coming on to do mountaineering for the anniversary of the ascent of Everest.
Yes. Yeah. That will be fun.
So that's all good.
I don't know which I'd choose as our favourite. I mean, I think it's really satisfying when we have a guest who, Muriel Zagar on French film. That was a really good one, Tom. Andrea Wolf on the German Romantics.
Gordon Carrera on Pigeons.
I knew you'd go
so much scepticism.
Well, he was jolly good, I have to say. He was jolly good. So if I had to go back and listen to one right now, that's Napoleon's question. What would I, well, Tom, you'd go back and listen to Pigeons, would you?
No, because I know that. I think I'd go back and listen to Falklands.
Would you?
Yeah.
Might go back to Rubicon, I enjoyed. I enjoyed that a lot.
Well, you want to go back and listen to something that you don't absolutely know backwards.
Yeah.
Because you want the sense of being surprised and learning something, which is one of the great joys of doing this.
It is, isn't it? I mean, when you think about how many we've done, what worries me about it, actually, Tom, though, is this. I was looking back at the catalogue when I realised it was 2 years, and I thought to myself, there are lots of subjects here that I'm really interested in and don't know much about, i.e. Genghis Khan, I don't know, Babylon, these kinds of things. But the truth is, how much do I remember from those episodes?
Well, that's why you can go back and listen to them. That's fine.
Well, I'd like to just go back and do them again.
I tell you, one of the benefits for me is that do you save your notes for them? I've got a great kind of catalogue of notes on General Gordon, notes on pigeons.
What are you going to do with them?
I don't know. I can just consult them.
Write a history of the world.
Well, but they're full of great little details.
Your crush, Simon Sebag Montefiore, and Peter Frankopan with their histories of the world, because they don't mention General Gordon or pigeons.
Quite. a sad lack. I just thought, you know, if I ever have to do a history pub quiz round or something like that, just go through them, sort them out.
Yeah, you could. Absolutely.
Anyway, lots more to come. Two years, I'm sure. Two more years to go. Maybe
two more years to go.
Who knows?
What are you doing after the next 2 years?
I don't know.
What do you got going on that I don't know about in 2 years' time? Yeah, Jack is going mad in the chat. What? 2 more years. Tom, that's disgraceful. I'm planning for 2030.
10 more years.
10 more. Oh, my God.
What will we be doing by then?
Yeah. If we do the Costa Rican Civil War after 2 years, what the hell are we going to be doing after 10?
Exactly. Anyway, the Costa Rican Civil War, Dr. Valverde, Don Pepe, so much to look forward to.
So next week, we will do the podcast about the history of the World Cup, which I promise will be, for those of you who don't like football, we will make it fun and we will make it interesting. And then we will get into the 32-episode marathon and all kinds of delights.
And we are going to record a very brief kind of 10-minute introduction, aren't we, I think?
Are we?
I think so. I think we should do that.
You're just bringing this on me live, Tom.
No, we discussed it before. You've forgotten.
All right. Maybe. Fair enough.
Anyway, so lots to come. And we really hope you enjoy the World Cup Odyssey.
Yeah, of course we do. They will. I'm sure they will, Tom.
Yeah.
And if they don't, just don't tell us.
Yes. Yeah. So we have an Athelstan gig, don't we, at the weekend, which we're looking forward to very much. And we have two shows in Clapham, two live shows.
So for those of you who are not Athelstans, what can I say? We'll be seeing the Athelstans.
It's not too late, is it? Not too late to sign up and come along.
Maybe it is too late, but it's not too late to sign up for the next one. That's for sure. Yeah. Because the great thing about this, Tom, is we're on a treadmill of Athelstan events.
I know. Every 6 months brings a Brunenburg.
Or some. I wouldn't call it a treadmill. When I think about it, I call it a fun roller coaster.
Is it?
A fun roller coaster. So if you've missed this Athelstan event, there'll be another one next late spring, summer, I imagine, and then another one in the autumn, and so on and so forth until the end of time.
To the crack of doom.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much for listening. We have, what have we got? We've got Alfred coming up again. Oh, no, because you've
got
have
Alfred.
Them, they've had them. You've got the World Cups coming up, and then you will be getting them in what? I don't know, 7-day bursts?
5-day bursts. We haven't decided what bursts. You'll be getting bursts of incredibly niche subjects.
An episode on a niche subject every day.
Yeah.
32 days. So much to look forward to. We will see you very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.